I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. With me today is my chum, Father Garrett Burns.
What's up?
And my boon companion, Father Drew Hoffman.
This is not a reference I understand.
What does that mean?
It's like an old-timey phrase for just saying friend. I think we need to bring it back.
Okay.
Boon companion. I think it's companion in Scripture.
I don't think so, Chad.
I am almost positive it's in the Psalms. Somewhere in Scripture.
Yeah, you're no longer slaves. You are boon companion.
Boon companion. Right.
The Lord is my boon companion. Nothing shall I want.
You need to just start using that around WCU, just like normal. Just like pretend like, yeah, everyone uses this phrase.
Isn't chum the stuff they throw down to like get sharks or something?
It's that too. It's both. A chum, as a friend. You've heard that before, right?
I guess. We're chummy. Maybe I've heard that more.
My chums?
Yeah. My chums, no. I don't like that.
That's a real thing.
My chums. Yeah, I don't
like that. When you say it like that.
My chums.
You're no longer my boon companion.
What'd you say?
Is that Fergie song? My chums? That's something else.
Look what you started, Chad.
I do listen to a lot of Fergie.
Don't we all?
Actually, I've been on a kick lately. Some of the seminarians convinced me I had to listen to Taylor Swift because I'd never had done that before.
Did you listen to Midnight? The new album?
That's the new album, right? Yeah. Yeah, it didn't do it for me. Yeah. It didn't do it for me.
Me either.
I hear a lot of disappointment.
Yeah, but more Taylor is better. Like, that must be exhausting to have to put out album after album that are all bangers. Like, can you imagine if I give a homily and then people are like, that's pretty disappointing, which they do, but like they say it to my face. Like they put it on the internet and stuff like that.
I listened to 5 different albums. I mean, this was over several days. So that's how I do music. So I'm like, someone gives me an artist. I listened to 5 different albums. I think I took 3 songs and put them on my repeat cycle.
Which ones do you remember?
So this is a little embarrassing, but it's an earworm. Shake It Off.
Yeah, of course. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good.
There's no shame here. There's no shame in this space. I have a 64 song Taylor Swift bracket that I give to people. So
he has all the vinyls. He's got.
I do. Wow. I have 5 Taylor Swift vinyls.
Yeah, I'm not there. I'm not there yet. Cardigan.
Okay.
I liked Cardigan. And one that had Bon Iver as a guest artist. It was on the Evermore album.
Exactly.
There we go.
On the Evermore. Exiles not on Folklore.
Folklore. Yeah. Folklore. That's the one. Yeah. Yeah. I like
Evermore.
That one.
I think they're with him on Evermore.
They
too,
appeared on a couple of
Exile
them,
is great.
That was a good song. Yeah. I enjoyed that. So those are the 3 that made it onto the list.
All Too Well, 10-minute Taylor version is a masterpiece. It's a masterpiece.
I listened to it. It did not get it on my repeat cycle. But when I told people that I was listening to it, one of the SEMs said, as Father Drew talked about the 10-minute version and
time won't fly. It's like I'm paralyzed by it. I'd like to be my old self again, but I'm still trying to find it. This is high-level stuff that we're learning.
High-level stuff. I do like to take theology from Taylor Swift.
Yeah, I'll bring over I preach about it. So casually cruel in the name of being honest? Come on, people. I'll bring some vinyls over for you.
I love how you can't remember Boon Companion in Scripture, but at the drop of a hat, you can just rattle off Taylor Swift lyrics. I feel like this is telling.
She's like, I buried all my hatchets, but I've kept maps of where I put them. There's some good stuff here.
Lord, help us. Well, even though it may seem like we are in the studio of Taylor Swift, we are not. We are coming today from the studio of St. Nicholas.
Oh,
jolly.
It's first week of Advent out there, so.
Do you see they think they found his tomb?
No, really?
There's a big story last week that they think, and I have no idea if this is true, but there was a big internet story about how they think they may have found St. Nicholas's tomb.
He would have been what, Turkey?
Turkey.
Area? Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember all the details. And like Bari in Italy is where actually his bones are now, but maybe they were, I don't, you can look it up and it may not be legit, but they think they found.
That's cool, yeah.
A space that could have been his tomb.
I had no idea. No, that's news to me. And was there a knocked out Arian right next to his tomb?
Yeah, that's right.
Unconscious Arian? Well, this is the first week of Advent, which I really like Advent.
Yeah.
I'm a big Advent fan. But actually, when I was preparing, like, is that one of my favorite liturgical seasons? Well, you know, you can't beat Christmas and Easter. Unfair to compare it to Lent, because there's just a, I guess I like it better than ordinary time. Ordinary time's like the whipping boy of the liturgical seasons. You can just, I don't know. But I like Advent. I like Advent. What I don't like, a little hot take, I don't like Christmas music.
Boo you!
I had a feeling that you guys might be Christmas music fans.
Why? Because we're kind of energized, fun, healthy men.
Just is that chummy guys over here.
Because Taylor Swift comes easier than scripture. So naturally that Christmas music too would be your entree into theology.
What's your take? What's your backing behind this?
So, okay, I will say liturgical Christmas music, fine.
Oh, thanks, Chad, for the stamp of approval.
I don't mind.
I'll allow it.
I don't mind Christmas music. I mind it less on Christmas Day and Christmas season.
What the?
I have a rule in the hallway that I live in that they are not allowed to play Christmas music loud enough that it can be heard in the hallways during Advent. I don't want to hear it. If you want to put your headphones in and live out of season, by all means, do what you're going to do. But
it doesn't sound like that's the main, like a conception that was kind of a rule that you were supposed to, liturgical living, weren't supposed to listen to Christmas music until, I think they said that, antiphons, maybe you could.
Yeah.
But yours is just, it sounds like you just don't like it.
That's mostly the case. So I'll give you, there are some good Christmas songs. And when they're listening the proper season, I can get behind that. I have one Christmas album I like, and once Christmas or even the day before Christmas, I'll go so much. You know, you're warming up. I'll play it. But I honestly, what I think it stems from is I really hate shopping.
Okay.
Christmas shopping, and because I'm not good at it, and I don't know how to do it. And as soon as you step in those stores, you are just inundated with all these sappy and syrupy songs, and so those things mixed together. I hate the song Silver Bells. Like, it puts me into a violent rage when I hear it. If I were a boxer, that would be the song I would be playing as I'm stepping in the ring, because I just want to destroy something when I hear Silver Bells.
That does make sense, because it's like a song about people walking through kind of a dark town where the snow is falling and lights are shining and bells are ringing and everyone's going home to their family because Christ is born on Christmas Day and things like that. That is something that is antithetical to our experience as Christians. And so that's a good point, Chad. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What's happening here?
That's who I am. That's what Silver Bells, I hate. And Christmas music makes me think of retail and shopping and commercialism and consumerism and all those terrible things that steal away from what Christmas is. And so the only Christmas album I need, and it's the one from my childhood, is the Kingston Trio Christmas album. And I'll start listening on it Christmas Eve. And I will listen to that all the way until we return to ordinary time. It'll go on the record player pretty frequently, but that's it.
Who are you?
Yeah. He's got like three Christmas songs and three Taylor Swift songs. Yeah. He would do your brackets and be like, no final four. I only have three finalists.
We also have a 64 song Christmas bracket that on the first day, on today, when this is out, we'll go up on our chalkboard and we'll vote it up. Actually, O Come, O Come, Emmanuel won last year. And so,
I can get behind that. I don't need to hear Taylor Swift singing O Come, O Come, Emmanuel.
Taylor Swift's Christmas work is not her best work.
What artist is? Is there any good and respectable artist?
The Oh Hello's Christmas album is religious. It's Adventy. It's excellent. You should listen to Oh Hello's.
I have that on vinyl. But you think about like artists. How many of them is Christmas just their most commercial album, least good, all terrible? One of the things I like Kingston Trio is their classic traditional songs you don't hear very often. So they're not, like, I don't know, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer or whatever, a syrupy thing made.
Syrupy. I love syrup.
To sell toothpaste or whatever it is.
Chad, we have to sell things for the economy to work. I don't understand. Like, this place exists because the economy exists. What are we talking about?
Not from
here?
Christmas jingles, it doesn't.
Jeepers creepers, like the donors who gave to make this place a reality.
They gave because they love Christ and not because of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Christmas probably helped their bottom line. I just...
Well, you know what? I'll take that donation on December 26th. Thank you very much.
How do you feel?
And they can play whatever song they want.
How do you feel about Mary, Did You Know?
Yeah, that's always a hot topic.
Oddly enough, I don't have as strong emotions about that. I don't like it, but I don't get offended by it. There's people that love it, and so I say,
yeah, it's a masterpiece.
I wouldn't go that far.
The pentatonic version is.
That seems a little ridiculous there.
All I Want for Christmas Is You. That's a masterpiece.
That's a masterpiece. The greatest song ever written, besides All Too Well 10-minute version.
All I Want for Christmas Is You. Yeah. I don't even know Mariah if I know Carey, that
that's
one.
The that's, most famous Christmas song.
Is that her best song?
Always Be My Baby.
Tough look for you. Okay. That was a trick question, Drew. It's probably about her sixth best song.
Oh my
I do
gosh.
Not think our playlist would match up
not in
at
any
all.
Way.
At all.
I love Christmas music. I don't start. I'll probably start the Friday after Thanksgiving, because Friday after Thanksgiving I'll start decorating the basement and stuff. I'll give the students a bunch of money on Monday. I'll save up and I'll send them to Hobby Lobby just to deck out the basement, because we only get a few weeks where they're actually around that are Christmassy. So we have to sell. It's like at the seminary. I got mad when the seminary at Kenrick didn't want to celebrate Christmas. Like, this is all we get. We will be gone for the Christmas season, so let's celebrate a little bit.
I get that. I get that. I can support that.
Our dorm in college was a fire hazard because of the amount
I wish we had some
of
pictures
lights
of that.
In a tight space.
Incredible setup at the dorm.
Did you guys decorate it? So you did it at Kenrick. Did they decorate at Mundelein?
Some guys decorated their rooms, and then one of the hallways, the cams, like went all out, and they had like the blow-up snowman in the hallway. Like, you could barely even walk through there. There was so much just large and obnoxious stuff. This is fun. I'm for it.
Taylor and Christmas are combined. It's like, I would like more of these good things. Why would I want less of these good things?
I like the decorations. I do like decorations, but they lose their place, and you get distracted, and everything's like from Friday after Thanksgiving until Christmas Day, and then December 26th, it all goes away. And does that not frustrate you?
No, it doesn't frustrate me at all. Like, I absolutely understand where you're coming from.
That
but
doesn't frustrate
it doesn't
you.
Frustrate me.
That on November 29th, half the radio stations are Christmas music, and December 26th, you can't even find a Christmas song.
It doesn't frustrate me. It's just
we live in different worlds.
We live in a different world.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it frustrates me. The early start, when you go before Halloween and there's already Christmas stuff up in a store, that's like, all right, chill a little bit. But in terms of afterwards, I don't think it's that big a deal. I don't know. We celebrated.
We celebrated. Then the theology has to, and I always preach about that on Christmas. Like, now the theology, I mean, okay, let's rock and roll. We got to be different now because of Jesus Christ. I don't need decorations.
So you have 4 weeks to celebrate consumerism, then one day to celebrate Jesus? Is that what I'm hearing?
I celebrate Jesus every day in my priesthood. My gosh, this has gotten contentious.
Well, I'm getting a little worked up.
Yeah.
So now that we've alienated half of our listening, send your, if you believe in Christmas as Christ intended it to be celebrated, go ahead and email your support. If you are a disciple of Hallmark, also, you know, you can let us know that as well.
And if Christmas helped your bottom line at all at your business, send your donation to 1810 North Roosevelt, St. Paul Catholic Student Center, not just the House of Formation, evidently.
I feel like there's got to be a balance where somehow, because I do believe like the direct decorations and the music can help prepare for Christmas. And somehow we've got to shift our minds that you can participate as long as it's in an anticipatory preparation that then fills out the season. And I feel like we missed that point. So I do think I don't want to be a puritanical and get rid of everything
Grinch.
Until December 24th. Yeah.
You were saying that. I mean, that's like what your words say.
There's part. there is parts of me that wants to do that just because I want the fight. But I get it. It can be preparation, but it's not used as preparation. It's used as in placement of the celebration, it feels like. And that does frustrate me. That's the world we live in.
Touché. It means we got some work to do.
Yeah.
We got some
work to baptize everything that's happening. Mm-hmm.
I think
I want to
show up at WSU, and every Christmas thing you do, I'm going to be there to offer a counterpoint of, maybe this is a little early, guys. Maybe
I commit now to preach about a Christmas song every day during Advent. And baptize it.
I am going to be like a street preacher out in front of WSU preaching the real Advent, thumping my Bible. And
my goodness, man.
Making sure they get some real Catholic theology and not this Mariah Carey, Taylor Swift version of faith that is so easy to find these days. So, again, having alienated half the listening segment, let's move on to some more important matters. We're working our way through the mailbag here at the podcast, and so we have another question from a listener I'd like to address today. He writes, please go over ways to come to know and love God, to actually form a deep and meaningful relationship with Him. I feel I only know of God. It's a big topic. Lots of stuff in there. I would maybe start with the experience this man is expressing isn't entirely unusual from a person coming out of a Catholic school system. You do know God. You have a lot of information about God. And sometimes people rail against the Catholic school. Well, they need to have this relationship with God and not just know about Him. And that's true. But facts are facts. It's much easier to teach knowledge of God than relationship, because the relationship is so personal. If you put that into a classroom setting, it doesn't really work, at least not typically very well. And so the knowledge is an easier thing to teach, but we can't forget the fact that for many people, knowing about God is a foundational stone for entering into relationship with Him. It doesn't have to work that way, but that is a common experience of gaining that knowledge that we can then enter deeper into relationship with God. But like I said, that's a big topic, a number of ways we could take that from. So I don't know where you guys want to address it from.
My first thought was, I mean, because I could have seen myself writing that, like you said, coming out of Catholic high schools and stuff, and you know a lot of stuff, or you hear that a lot. I know about God, but I don't know God. And I would say yes and no, but like for myself, I don't think I'd ever read the Gospels all the way through. Mm. So like, okay, yeah, like I knew the teachings about God, but also that's the primary source to know even about God, and it's the living Word, so you're going to come to know Him as a person. So I think that's a great step of diving deeper into the Scriptures, because it's not just teaching. It's not just the mind that's engaged in that. You're meeting this person through the stories of his life.
Thomas Merton, I think, was asked what his number one tip for prayer was, and he said, take the time. Take the time. And that I have found to be tremendously helpful. Often when I complain in my own heart about distance from the Lord, not always, but often, and when I hear it from other people, again, not always, and then you ask about the time that they're spending with the Lord, it's very minimal. Very yep. minimal time in set aside prayer. So I wonder why my relationship isn't growing, why I don't know Him, why I know things about Him, but not Him. But do I spend any time with Him? And then we can get into kind of what that would look like. But take the time seems to be the starting point, because then my whole life kind of revolves around that. It's like Sunday Mass. My whole life will, I think it was Father Matt McGinnis maybe who said something like, if we go to Mass every Sunday, things tend to start working out. And that's not a perfect model at all, mm-hmm. but I think there's some, because I've made a statement about where my priorities lie. So even when I cut out time for prayer every single day, even just a little bit, I've made a statement to God about where my priorities lie. Well, then a friendship can develop. Like I've made a commitment to a weekly gathering with brothers or something like that, or friends, or okay, even if the time with the brothers isn't all of that maybe edifying or energizing, things like that, there's something about me setting aside that time that deepens that relationship and shows that commitment. So I think that has to be a starting point.
Mm-hmm. That's the first thing actually I have written on my list there is time. And I think you're absolutely right. How, just with people, you don't become friends with people unless you spend time with them. And God's not different from that. We might say, oh yeah, I know about God, but I don't know God. Well, compare the time. How much time have you studied for your religion class versus how much time have you spent praying? I've spent a lot more time reading and doing these than I have maybe in there. Well, that tells you something. Relationships take more time than study. You know, you can study for a little bit and learn the facts and things like that, but to truly know a person and to that relationship takes time. And you've got to be patient with it. You don't become typically best friends with someone overnight. It's not like the, yeah, did we just become best friends? Yeah. Doesn't really work that way. And neither does it with God. You got to give it that time. So yeah, I absolutely agree. And it's funny you mentioned Thomas Merton, because he's going to be our final word today.
Nice.
So you're just anticipating everything that's coming. Kind of like how you deal with Christmas.
Oh, my just wait.
I was just going to say how good of friends we've become, so I know you, but never mind.
I think there's a general rule there, something like you guys are hitting on, that probably you actually do know better than you feel
yeah.
how to come to know yeah. and love God. Like this is it's not just a relationship like any other relationship. Like, obviously there's a mystery there that's different than just your friendship with your chums, with the other people at school or work or wherever. But how do you come to know and love them? You spend time with them. You know, maybe you can think of like the love languages or something like that, right? Like you speak words of affirmation to them. You could do that with God. That's just praise, just telling God who he is and praising him for that. Service, like that's a big way, I think, to come to know and love God, encountering him in the poor, taking some time, say this, yep. I'm gonna do a mission trip, or I'm gonna get out of my own bubble and serve somebody that's in need. So yeah, I think a lot of times we can come up with like, well, I have no idea how I'm gonna grow to love God. Well, it's a relationship, it's a friendship. How do you do it in any other relationship, and then apply that to your relationship with God?
And there's no finish line. You know, God is so massive. Sometimes it's more helpful for me, like, oh, what's my relationship with God? Well, let me look back where I was 10 years ago, where I have some perspective. Oh, yeah, I've grown a lot. I still feel like I'm at the beginning. I think it's St. Francis of Assisi who says, I'm always at the beginning. And you know what? I think 50 years from now, I'm going to hopefully continue growing that relationship. I'm still going to feel at the beginning because God is so massive compared to what I am and what I can contain of him in my mind and my heart. And so, but it's going to take that time just to kind of keep growing. So sometimes looking back tells me more of how much I've grown than this feeling, like you were saying, Garrett, that can be a little bit misleading. I don't feel like I know God. Well, you're already doing more than you think you are, and you've come further than you think you have.
I think about my focus missionaries trying to make friends with students. So focus missionaries are new on campus. They're trying to become friends with students, and you got to do some hard things. You got to show up to some things that maybe you don't really want to do, or go to some places, or try to run into them accidentally in something, or some stuff like that. Like, it doesn't work the first time usually. And you've touched on this, but it's only then the people who have sacrificed and given and done some maybe strange stuff to become friends with other people. All right, am I willing to do that with God? Or do I think that it's just going to kind of click into place? Peter Kreeft compares prayer to painting. And he says, like painting is actually kind of fun. The actual painting of walls, you have some music going, you're seeing the progress and stuff like that. What's annoying about painting is all the prep work. And that's what keeps you from painting. Buying paint, putting down drop sheets, moving the furniture, putting painter's tape around, stuff like that. That's annoying, and it takes a long time. The actual painting is maybe an enjoyable experience. So is prayer. The prep work is what's hard, and that's where the rubber meets the road. What time? What do I do in advance? How much sleep am I getting the night before? What situations am I putting myself in to pray? Do I have materials in that kind of stuff? That's the hard kind of gritty work, like friendship. The actual conversation can be magnificently enjoyable, but the prep work, it takes some work.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. I've not read that before. I like that analogy. And I think an important related to the time component, and we've talked about this before on the podcast, and it's a big thing that I hammer away on, is that faithfulness, that fidelity. That's part of putting the time in, is that I'm faithful to my prayer, that I keep showing up. And like you were saying, Drew, sometimes that means showing up some things that I'm not super excited for and in the moment, but that's how you build that relationship, is being faithful to it. And one of my pet peeves of, you'll see this sometimes of students that have come out of our Catholic high school, said, well, I don't really know God and I'm mad about that, or I'm not happy about that. And they stop doing stuff. I'm like, you're shooting yourself in the foot. You're deciding right now how you will know God. Yet, so you don't stop just because you're not taking religion classes anymore. Okay, now's the time to even lean more into college and get involved in the student center and all that. Spend time in the chapel. Now, you have more freedom now to decide how you are going to spend your time than prior to this. Spend some time with God. Don't just tell me, well, I don't know about, all I do is know about God.
That, for, I know there's some exceptions, but for a lot of our Catholic high school kids, just to be blunt, that is an excuse to do what I want.
Yes.
That is an excuse to do what I want. They never taught me to know God. They never taught. Can our Catholic high schools get better? Sure, of course, every aspect of our Catholic diocese of Wichita can get better.
Right.
But with a lot of those kids, then you invite them into, hey, let's try that. Let's do a Bible study. Let's do all these. Nah. It's like, okay, no, you just want to do what you want and don't want to be kind of told what to do here. There's something else going on here. So this listener, I'm certain, is deeply asking that question. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, though, when you hear that, it's an excuse so I can go kind of be myself.
Because, yeah, that was one thing I was reading just about different levels of conversation just we have with people. Like, you know, level one is just your... just sharing information. You're not really entering into any of a communion or a connection. And then there's a next level where you're kind of offering, you're almost arguing a little bit. You're trying to offer for my point of view and seeing how you respond. And if you reject, then I'm just going to kind of pull back. But then the deeper level is I'm actually willing to be influenced, that I enter into a relationship in that way. And that's where the best conversations happen, where it's not just like I come into this and I'm going to say this, 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 and this. And I'm expecting you're going to say that, 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 and that.
Right.
But I just enter into it. And so prayer can be the same way, or just living your life of faith. Like you're saying, when you go to college, okay, you've left, like you got to be willing to be influenced by God and let him lead you somewhere. If you're not open to that, and it's just like, God, do something for me, then you're not, you're just on those surface level of a relationship. Yeah. And so, yeah, you're not going to grow into a deep level of knowledge and love of him because you're not willing to be impacted by what he has to say.
Mm-hmm. I think kind of related to that is when you enter into prayer, also the importance of being honest in your prayer. There's so many people when they start prayer, okay, I'm going to talk to God like I think he wants me to talk to him, and I'm going to present the image that God wants of me, and it's not really who I am, but this is what I'm going to be, and you're not fooling God. And so, you know, if you're mad about something, if you're mad at God, go tell him. If you're confused by something, go tell him. If you don't know how you feel, say that. But make sure that you are being honest in that prayer. Again, analogous to human relationships. A person you're not honest with, you're never going to have a very deep relationship. If you can't share who you are, the good, the bad, the indifferent, the confused, if you're not honest with a person, you're not going to have a deep relationship. Same thing with God. And so if all you do is saying rote prayers and presenting an image, well, you know, you're going to get an image of God, not actually God. And rote prayers, I'm not knocking them.
Yeah.
Those lead to a deeper meditation at that, but it's got to go use those, but go beyond that too.
There's that old saying, we say prayers in order to pray.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I can't remember if I've used this analogy before. I remember someone saying, like, God is not the queen, rest in peace, you know, but like her kids would only get to see her for like 30 minutes a day or something like that. And they were with the professors and whoever else. So during those 30 minutes, they were like coached up. And so like, show the queen, show your mom what you've learned today and how good you're being and all this stuff. And I think sometimes we go to prayer like that of like, I'm going to show how I've got everything together to God in this time of prayer. When really just want, like, he's a father. He wants you to be honest about where you are. If you're struggling, if you're whatever, he doesn't want this prim and proper, what you think he wants to see, but he just wants to see you.
I think I've shared this idea before on the podcast, but I give it again and again, because I like it, an imagery for people. If God only knew you by what you told him, how well would he know you? If he only knew you by what you told him about yourself, how well would he know you? And if you can answer that, that's going to give you an insight into how honest you are in your prayer, how vulnerable you are in your prayer, how deep you yourself are entering into your prayer. If God only knew you by what you told him, how well would he know you?
That's, again, the honesty. This, like, I have a class I'm teaching with a permanent community, and I showed them just Tuesday this week, a scene from The West Wing. I don't know any West Wing.
Love
fans
West
here?
Wing.
Okay.
Love West Wing.
This, yeah. Best friends.
We're back, baby.
I get it. Okay. Two Cathedrals is a season finale.
Yes.
In which.
Fantastic episode.
Yeah, just long story short, the president, who's Catholic, loses somebody really close to him. He's going through a lot of stuff. He's deciding whether to run for president or not. They're about to leave the funeral, and he makes everybody leave the National Cathedral. So he's the only one locked in the cathedral. And he goes on this rant against God. And calls him, he's seminary trained, so he speaks in Latin for part of it. He calls God a feckless thug at one point, and he throws his cigarette down and on the floor and puts out. Okay, and I tell people, don't call God a feckless thug and don't put out a cigarette in a church. But there's some honesty that's going in here. And the episode ends with him making a new decision and like being healed in a certain sense. But that honesty, I love showing that as an image of prayer because of how blunt he is. Because he knows he can take it. And then in Job, like when Job's blunt with the Lord, guess what? The Lord's blunt back with him. He's like, I didn't know that you were around when the oceans were created. I was not aware of that. Okay, that's super interesting. I didn't know that. And then Job's like, okay, we can come back to the middle. But God doesn't condemn Job because of that. Mm-hmm. But a dialogue where one person has the last word can also be be my experience of prayer as well.
Yeah. I've never thought about using that West Wing episode. Yeah, I love that. The other great West Wing episode, tangent, but one of the early ones with the death penalty and confession.
Yeah. Again, and he gets out his rosary, right?
And it's really cool. You know, obviously you don't want to take all your theology from it. There's some other issues throughout that series with him and his Catholicism, but especially in those two episodes, there is a conversion that takes place in his own heart, but each of them come through with an honesty. And in the confession episode, it takes a priest kind of calling him out, like, you realize what you've done, you know the right, and you know why you did this. And he has to be honest about the decisions he's made and why he's done that. And with that honesty in prayer, that raw unfilteredness, through that, a conversion takes place and he's moved to a deeper place.
There's a great line in there that it's almost a throwaway line. Someone's like, you got to give it to the Catholic Church. They always stand for life or something like that, because there's like across the board. Okay. You disagree with them, but they do have they've got an opinion here on how life works.
They've got some consistency, about 2000 years worth. Yeah. Well, thanks for listening to About 4 o'clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. I've got the final word today, and as we said earlier, it's coming from Thomas Merton. He says, "The biggest human temptation is to settle for too little." See you next week.